This episode is brought to you by Alexandria local Robin Arnold of McInerney Associates Realty. Honest, professional, warm, lighthearted. That's Robin. She's a longtime Alexandria resident and businesswoman, well known for getting the results her clients want.
In keeping with the tenets of LeaseStat, Robin is an active and contributing member and often leader of her community. As a steadfast supporter of local small businesses, a cheerleader for school programs that serve those most in need, and a relied upon sponsor for local causes and events that serve the greater good, Robin believes in the mission of collaboration and conversation to creatively build a community that helps each other.
If you're looking to buy or sell a home in the Northern Virginia area, Robin can help you get what you need efficiently and effectively. To learn more about Robin and her work, contact her at robinarnoldsells@gmail.com or at 703-966-5457. This podcast is made possible with support from Salon de Zen. Located in Alexandria, Virginia, Salon de Zen has an inclusive mindset which welcomes and embraces diversity. With the goal of making every client feel safe and seen, the team at Salon de Zen is dedicated to helping you become more of who you are. And I'm not just reading copy here. I'm a happy client. Hi, it's Jess Kay. For over 5 years, I've been seeing Maria Elizabeth, the owner, for all my hair transformations, from blonde to auburn and even cherry cabinet brown. Maria has elevated my style in a way that makes me feel beautiful. The stylists at DeZen are always on the leading edge of the latest hair trends and know exactly how to use them in a way that works for you and your style.
Can a salon really do all that? We invite you to find out. Visit www.salondezen.com for more information. A chance to browse the lookbook and meet their team of stylists. Even if you're not local, you should check out what Salon DeZen is doing right now. Follow them on Instagram at Salon DeZen and find all their social links on their website. www.salondezen.com. Your hair does look great, by the way.
Thanks. It's all Maria.
This episode is brought to you through the support of Tony Miller and Ameris Bank Mortgage. Buying a home is one of the biggest purchases most of us make. House hunting can be exciting and disappointing at the same time. Some people find the perfect home in 3 days. For others, it can take months.
Tony has seen it all and understands how you feel. Once you finally find the perfect home, she wants to help you quickly find the perfect mortgage. As a native Alexandrian, Tony is your local lender providing first-class service to ensure your loan application process goes smoothly and you have the best loan option for your financing needs so you can start your life in the home you have always dreamed of.
Personable, professional, organized, and efficient, Tony is skilled at anticipating the needs of her clients before they know what they need and can help guide them through an often overwhelming process.
To find out more on how you can secure your dream home or refinance your existing home, contact Tony at tony.miller@amerisbank.com or look her up on Facebook at Tony S-L-Y-E Miller. We started this podcast because we want to have really honest, authentic, and even uncomfortable conversations about anything, but especially the things no one wants to talk about. And our hope is that these conversations can build a community of people who might feel less isolated and alone. So we are two Jesses, and this is We Should Talk About That.
Hi, Jess. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking. I don't know. That sometimes we switch the role of who asks first. So that was kind of nice.
I think we've all learned by now. Just don't ask Jess B how she's doing because it just usually doesn't go well. So anything in particular? Like, why are you so good?
I mean, does it have to be particular? I actually just want to say, don't sleep on yourself. It's not that you're not doing well. It's that you answer honestly instead of giving like platitudes. So, you know, I just want to make a note.
I don't know how to do platitudes. Well, I appreciate that very much. I'm also doing well today because, you know, it's this week and not last week.
Yeah.
So we can only like crawl out of that hole, right?
I mean, one would hope that all we can do is go up, but yeah. I am always cautious.
Yeah, I know.
Call me cynical, but always cautious.
I think realistic. Well, who are we talking today?
I am so excited to introduce to you who we're talking to today, because it seems like the thing you and I keep coming up with that we should talk about is menopause. So
because we're getting older.
We're getting older. We're getting wiser. We're getting more seasoned and better. How's that for
love that. Basketball? I just wish my periods would stop. Okay. So who are we talking to? I do. I really hate them. I hate them. I'm so sick of them. Like, if I'm going to have all the other stuff, like, dear God, can't we just stop with the freaking monthly cycle? Okay. Again, right. Who are we talking to?
I'm sorry. I just need a beat because I'm laughing. I'm excited because Claire Gill, who is the founder of the National Menopause Foundation, is joining us today. The National Menopause Foundation is something that she started after 20 plus years in public relations and working for Fortune 500 companies, and she realized there was not a space for menopause, which I feel like is a recurring theme for women that we start to find out the closer we get to menopause, it's like we disappear. So the mission of the National Menopause Foundation is to create a positive change in how people perceive, understand, and experience menopause through education, peer-to-peer support, activism, and research. She's also the host of the podcast, The Positive Pause, which is a motivational-minded podcast that covers topics women want to know about as they journey towards menopause, while they are in menopause, and through menopause. My favorite part of her vision is that she envisions a world where women thrive at every stage of their lives, and thank God for that. Mm. Claire, thank you so much for agreeing to talk with us today. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Nice to meet you, Jesses, and find out more about the work you're doing, and tell your listeners about the work of the National Menopause Foundation. But you're right. It's something that, you know, more people need to talk about, and it's a good topic to talk about. And I think, again, podcasts like this just help spread the word. All women will go through menopause, hopefully, right? If we're healthy, we should go through menopause. And I guess that's something that, you know, we need to talk about too, that it's kind of like there used to be those generations where women didn't make it to menopause. So the fact that we're getting to that stage of life and well beyond it these days is something to celebrate, you know?
That's a really interesting point. Like, right. I think about my maternal grandmother. She died when she was in her mid-30s of cervical cancer.
Yeah.
I've never thought about the fact that she didn't have the privilege to make it to menopause.
Or the number of women used to die in childbirth. Like you never made it through.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's back up. I want to know two things. I want to know all the things really, but we've only got an hour here. So the first thing I want to ask is what impassioned you about the phase of menopause so much that you wanted to start a foundation? And the second thing I'd like for you to define, because we're talking to lots of different women all over the world, actually, about menopause and their work in middle life. How do you define menopause, and how are you looking at it as this foundation?
Well, as Kay had said, I was working in women's health and realized there was no nonprofit dedicated to women at midlife. And so I've said to people, I was recruited by Save the Bats. So there's a national organization to save the bats, but there was no national organization for women at menopause. And I mean, this really struck me. And in my work at the National Osteoporosis Foundation, we'd been approached and they said, you know, by somebody who was like, oh, we need to work with your organization because there's no organization for women at menopause. And I was like, that's impossible, right? Yeah. And my mother is a retired nurse. She passed away a couple of years ago, but she did talk to us about menopause. I vividly remember my mom going through menopause, and my mom was a later in life mom as well. She didn't have me till she was 40. She had my brother at 45. So we were older when she was going through menopause, you know. I mean, not older, I mean like younger, like 10, you know, 8, 9, 10, you know. So I vividly remember open the door, close the door, open the window, close the window, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And her saying to me, like, it's menopause, you know, this is menopause. Yeah. You know, she was also a midwife, so she also made sure that we knew how to deliver a baby if we ever needed to, right?
As one does, right?
Right? Just look, this is what you do. It's a natural process. It's going to happen whether you do anything or not. I mean, I love that kind of stuff. So that was, but that was also about all my mother said about menopause, right? Mm. So at least I knew, and I knew myself as I was skipping periods and, you know, having some other kind of symptoms that, okay, I know to talk to my gynecologist about this. And I did, and fortunately had a gynecologist who was very open to talking about it and, you know, did gave the blood test to me to let me know where I was, whether or not I was fully into menopause or not. So again, when I was approached and like, there's no national organization for this, I started checking into it. And there is fantastic organizations. There's the North American Menopause Society. They are a clinical group. This is for clinicians who want to specialize in menopause. And they have amazing, I would, you know, recommend everyone go to itsmenopause.org. They actually own that URL. I would, you know, go there. There's fantastic information, but it's kind of clinical, right? It's a doctor telling women what they need to know about menopause. And I wanted something for women telling women, here's what I've experienced. Here's what works for me. Here's what doesn't, you know, that kind of peer-to-peer support. And that I didn't find. And so I hired a group to get my 501c3 and to start this process for me, you know, board members, people together. So that was the impetus for me that, you know, there is a nonprofit, as I said, for everything.
Yeah.
How is there not a nonprofit specifically for us at midlife? And the other thing is, you've probably read and stuff too and experienced in your own lives there. I think maybe a generation before it was the, okay, you need to go off quietly now. You're done with your reproductive years. Your usefulness as a woman has ended and, you know, enjoy your golden years. And so I would joke with friends that I've never done anything quietly in my life. And I do not intend to do menopause or postmenopause quietly. And again, then, you know, looking at the, I know I feel at my absolute best right now, right? I feel like I'm at the top of my game. And why is this not the most empowering time in women's lives, right? Why aren't we owning this time? And so I wanted to kind of get together with women who feel the same and start working on ways that we can help bring that about. And so that was really what motivated me and my board and my medical advisors to really get this foundation going. So the second part of your question about menopause. So again, it's really confusing, right? I don't think we know enough about it. So when we talk about menopause, menopause is the day your period has stopped for the 12 months. Period free, 12 months.
Okay.
That was menopause, literally like the day that that's menopause. Right after that, you're post-menopause, right?
Okay.
There's no menopause time period. It's literally the name for when your period has stopped for 12 consecutive months.
Okay. Right?
What we talk about, I think, amongst ourselves and what our clinicians talk about is really perimenopause, when we're experiencing all the symptoms leading up to this, right? Yeah, sure, at the 12-month mark, since you're having hot flashes, but it's not like it starts then. No, you've been having it perhaps for 5 to 7 years, some women even 10 years prior to the day that the cessation of the period happens. And I, you know, I'm with you, Jess, when it's like the, oh my God, can they just stop? You know, and I'll go like 3 or 4 months and then I'll bleed again. I'll be like, damn it. Like, can we just end this?
Yeah.
So that's it. So perimenopause, I think, is what most of us consider menopause, right? That term.
It's okay.
The changing, the leading up to the hormonal switch, all of those things that are happening. We start to experience the symptoms, the night sweats, the, you know, vaginal dryness, the sleep, you know, interruptions.
Oh my God, the sleep.
Depression, all of those things that go with it. Those are all really leading through. Now, they can also continue postmenopausal. And I have some dear friends in their 70s who are still having hot flashes, and it makes me cry because really it totally depends on the person, you know? And so how we experience menopause is very personal. You'll probably in your own friend circle have women who are like, eh, no big deal. I didn't even know this, right? And then others who have said to me, it's been horrific, right?
Yeah.
And my friends who are not into, you know, hyperbole are like, it's been horrific. That really is upsetting to me, and that they feel like they have to suffer through it and that they don't
and
have
suffer to silently, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to suffer when you can bitch about it, but then to have to suffer in a void or a vacuum where there's no information, there's no one to talk to. The thing that there's so many things that you just said that struck me, but are there doctors out there that won't talk to you about menopause? Is this still a taboo thing when you are in the exam room and you've just had a pap smear?
It shouldn't be, right? It really depends on the doctor. But, you know, I've talked to a lot of even primary care physicians who say, you should be able to talk to your doctor about menopause. And you'll see there's a lot of, it really is, again, it's just the same with how the doctor feels about it. But many doctors are very open to it and talking about it. And then you'll also hear these women saying with their doctors are like, you know, poo-poo it and send them home and say, oh, just deal with it, kind of, you know, kind of stuff. I think, again, depending on where you are, there is an opportunity for some of us to be able to seek out a different doctor. Yeah. Right. And that's really important. But when I was creating the Menopause Foundation and creating the website, one of the things I was very cognizant of is that's not always an option for women, mm-hmm. right? If you're in a small town and there's one gynecologist or there's one thing, that's it. And if they won't talk to you about it and you don't feel, or you don't feel comfortable, where do you go? And so that's why I wanted us to have all of that information available. So at night, a woman could type in, you know, what she needed to know and maybe get some good advice or see information from our medical advisor, sort of explain it to her. This is normal. It's okay. And here's what you can possibly do to address that. We also have to be comfortable talking about it.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm just struck with the thought, or the truth, really, that anytime we're not talking about something, shame finds a way to attach itself to it. It's either because we're not talking about it because we feel ashamed, or it's a doorway for the shame to attach to it. And I wonder, I think that there is this like shame component to being menopausal and to the things that make you a woman changing and not working, and kind of this almost this like perceived breakdown of the system. I mean, not only are you as this community giving women a space to get actual information that will help them, like logistically, physically, but you're a space where it's accepting and free of shame. And I think that that's huge for the psychological component that goes into this massive time in a woman's life.
That's right.
Massive time.
Massive.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, it's the same thing. It's sort of like that it is connected to being older, right?
Yeah.
And then again, men become distinguished, we become useless. How does that work, right? So that's a big leap for all of us to change. And it's we have to change it first within the women's community, right? Within ourselves and our own dialogue.
Absolutely.
That we're having, right?
Absolutely.
And if we don't get there, we're never going to get other people to get there, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it just seems like even now, as you've seen, there's so many more products, there's so many discussions about menopause. You see Sex and the City is coming back, and they're going to be talking about being, you know, sexy at 50, you know, yep. Those kind of things. All of that will help, right? And I think, you know, again, it's making it more of a societal acceptance. And, you know, it's not to say that everyone has to talk about vagina. And if you want to keep your menopause to yourself and just go through, that's fine too, right? There is no right or wrong answer. But as you said, there shouldn't be shame associated with it. And can we celebrate it instead of dread it? That's mm-hmm. my big thing. You know, I said it was joking about, you know, now they have those like welcome to puberty kits and like, you know, right. You can buy them for your daughters and your, you know, nieces and stuff. And, you know, oh, it's great. You've reached this. Well, I want a welcome to menopause kit. Right. And it should have stress ball and, you know, squeezy ball, stress ball and lube and a fan, you know, and all of these things. And sort of like
ice packs.
You've made it to this stage of life. Right.
It's interesting because it's actually a day. Like, it's a day that you could celebrate. We were speaking to somebody who is like-minded to you in the UK and is doing a lot of work called Magnificent Midlife, Rachel Lancaster. And she has talked about how she wants to, like a birthday, menopause day, you get your period on a day and then you close your period on a day. And that should be one of those things. We need to start a company. Maybe there can be a cake or yeah. or a box, a club that every month, instead of Fab Fit Fun, it's Fab Fit Menopause. And every month or 2 months, you receive a box of things that you need to get through menopause.
Oh my God, I love that. Like a subscription thing for menopause. I think that we should do that here. Maybe this is the platform to do that because it's fascinating to me. Like my mind is blown every time we get the opportunity to talk to so many incredible women who are post 40, who are in their menopausal years, like living their best lives. And that is not the picture that I think even culture wants you to, society wants you to have.
They don't.
And I love that you're not going to do this quietly.
Right.
I'm fired up.
Right. But then we need to be fired up. Right. And that's what's going to change, you know, the perspective. And then, you know, I think, like I said, there's so many things that are going on. It's like, so I'm 51 now. And again, so I'm really like, this is the age we're supposed to be, you know, this is, you're supposed to hit menopause. Most people do that. I'm like, bring it. Right. Hurry up. But I look at, like, you know, the women my age. So like Jennifer Lopez is 51. She went on tour and did this big thing. And I had this big tour for my 50th birthday. And I was like, man, she's going to do it better. But that, again, is fabulous, because tell anyone that Jennifer Lopez isn't sexy and at the top of her game right now, right? And so we were talking to one of my board members who owns a beauty company now for menopausal skin and stuff like that. Again, she created a category because there wasn't one.
Yeah.
But we were talking about, do you remember like when the Golden Girls series was on?
Yes.
Right? We're talking about what age did you think the Golden Girls were? They were supposed to be, there was an episode where Blanche was going through menopause. Right? So that's what male television society thought menopausal women looked like, right? That we were going to all live in a home together with our, you know, 80-year-old mother, and we were, except for Blanche, you know, everyone was kind of de-sexed and kind of old. So again, just that changed perception now. What 51 looks like to the rest of us is Jennifer Aniston, Courtney Cox, and Jennifer Lopez. And yeah. So not that that's not enough pressure.
Right. Well, that brings its own set of problems.
It matters now. And I think perceptions are changing. And so, you know, what does that mean? Right. And what my smoking hot is in my 50s is obviously not going to be Jennifer Lopez, but I can be the best me. And that's possible. So let's all decide what it is we want to do in this second half of our life and do it.
Yeah. Right? It's exciting.
It is. It is. But I think it's really important for younger women like you to start to learn more about that, right? To have these conversations with, again, like the older, wiser friends who are going through these kinds of things, and that we're able to share, again, what works for us, what we've been doing, you know, what's been, how that's changed, how to deal with it. I think what I'm trying to do now with the Menopause Foundation, which I think is something that's unique that this organization can do, is sort of addressing at the national level, what are we doing to make sure that women have access to what they need to succeed during the menopausal years, right? So for instance, in the workplace, you know, we talk about this, there are a huge number of women at very high levels now in companies who happen to be of menopausal age.
Right. You say for 42 million women right now are aged 40 to 60 in the US.
There we go. Right.
That's a lot of women.
That's a lot of working women. So we have all these women in their 40s and 50s experiencing these symptoms. And we have now laws in place about addressing the birth years, the reproductive years, and breastfeeding in the offices and all that kind of stuff, whatever. There's nothing in place to make adjustments for women who are having major hot flashes and sweating in the office, right? So the UK, as you talked about your guests on the UK, the UK actually has a much better system already in place where they actually have some human resource tips for how to address, you know, making an office environment comfortable for women at menopause. And I don't want to single us out either, right? You know, make it, again, something that's shameful, but it should be something that's normalized. And the way to do that is to normalize it at the top levers. So I'm meeting with the Office of Women's Health at all the major agencies. I've met with Health and Human Services. I'm meeting with Labor. We'll meet with the FDA. We'll do all that kind of stuff and talk with them about what are they doing, you know, within their organizations that are not only, that are really addressing women's lifespan, right? It's not just about the childbearing years. It's not just about discrimination. It's about the whole lifespan. And how do we make sure that we just keep menopause top of mind as they're having those discussions?
So what do those conversations look like when you go in and talk to those agencies? Like, what are some of the things that you're trying to bring to their attention? Or what are you looking for?
Well, right now what I'm looking for is more, I'm calling it a listening tour, is I'm trying to find out what are their programs that their priority focuses are on. Are they updating the materials that they currently have available for women at menopause? What are their, like, the National Women's Health Week look like, you know, and will menopause be part of that? A lot of it is access to treatment. So this is very healthy, but I don't know if you're familiar with the Women's Health Initiative, which was this groundbreaking study that looked at women's health and is still going on. And that was the study that was responsible for about 10 years ago, everyone saying that women should not take hormone replacement therapy because it might lead to breast cancer and heart attack. Yeah. Remember that? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it turns out 10 years later now, it was wrong. Okay. So now that they've had a chance to just to kind of study it further and do a longitudinal look at it. And again, the Women's Health Initiative, it wasn't necessarily looking specifically at women at menopause. It was just something they extracted, you know, and made an assumption about. And that's how research works, unfortunately. And that's where we run into trouble. So we had a whole generation of women who did not take hormone replacement therapy. Right. And if you talk with women today, and if you talk with some gynecologists today, they will still tell you they won't prescribe hormone replacement therapy because, again, the risk of breast cancer. It turns out it's a very small, right? It's if you are 10 years after menopause, you should not prescribe hormone replacement therapy. You need to prescribe it for women who are actually going through menopause, like within those first couple of years, right? The perimenopausal and the first years. Then the health benefits of hormone replacement therapy far outweigh the risks. So what that did then was a couple of things. One, we had a whole generation of women suffering a lot more than they needed to. Confusion, it scared women. It was more of the, well, we're just going to have to suck it up. And because there was no options. And so to just get through it. There was a generation of that related to my osteoporosis work. It also then impacts bone health because yes, we lose up to 20% of our bone mass in the first 5 to 7 years post-menopause. Hormone replacement therapy helps prevent that, right? The estrogen and that. So now we have a whole generation of women who are going to have osteoporosis much earlier and much more severe than previous generations because there was no hormone replacement therapy. So those are the kinds of things that I've talked about with the Women's Health Organization. Like, how are we getting out the word now that we know this has changed? There was such, as we said, so much news, so much information, so much about it when it happened. What are we doing now? What are you doing at the national level, these heads of these women's offices, to counter that and to provide more additional information? And where is the new research that's being done now to show what's really happening with women at this stage of life? That has to be done at a national level. So those are the kind of things I'm seeding. And then there's also things about us like access to care. So if you have private insurance, getting hormone replacement surgery or getting, you know, the patches and stuff like that, the types of hormones you can get are covered, but it's still very difficult. Mm-hmm. If you've moved into Medicare, you know, if you're 65 and still having, you know, hormonal symptoms, which many, many, many women are, and then it becomes a lot of times too, it's a pain and comfort issue for women in that stage of life. That's not covered.
And seriously,
it's not covered under Medicare. It's considered medically not necessary. Right. So, you know, we talk about, and I'm going to blank on the name, but there's a scary process where like the uterus actually starts dropping and comes out the vagina kind of stuff.
Whatever. Prolapsing.
Yeah. That is not covered by insurance. It's cosmetic.
I kind of feel like your uterus falling out of your vagina is a medical issue.
You would think. Yes, not so much cosmetic. However, you know, as we all know, erectile dysfunction is something that can and is treated and is covered by insurance. So we have some work to do. I want this groundswell of women saying, you know, knock, knock, knock. You need to pay attention to me and my health. And again, my sexual health, my well-being, all of it is important throughout my lifespan. It does not end when I'm not able to bear children. And so that's the work we're going to do together.
What are some of those things on the checklist then that you recommend women in menopause, post-menopause need to really be looking at in terms of their health and their psychological well-being?
Well, again, I think one of the important things to recognize is, you know, some of those health conditions that we're more at risk for, right? So like I said, osteoporosis, heart disease, breast cancer, right? It turns out, you know, we always think of it as a younger woman's thing, actually increases as we age. So that is something. You shouldn't stop having breast exams. You shouldn't stop having mammograms. I think all of that is important. As we unfortunately gain weight around menopause, it moves to the belly, right? And this, people talk about that transformation often, that it moves from the weight moves from the hips area, again, like the childbearing thing, to the belly, which is where the heart issues come in and things like that, whatever. So we do have to worry about our diet and exercise. And remembering too that it's never too late, right? You start where you stand. If whatever level you're in, take a step towards doing something a little bit healthier in that regard. Start walking. If you have been a marathon runner, you're still going to have to adjust your schedule to adjust for menopause, believe it or not. It does change us, and we do need to kind of look at all of those things where we're doing it. And then the psychological stuff, again, is dealing with that and understanding that there is a psychological impact of us losing our ability to bear children. That is, as you know, we talked about, that is what women, you know, are all about. But I think some women obviously deal with it when they've never had children, you know, and for whatever reason. And we've talked about that in society, that that's okay and everything's fine too. But there's still an adjustment that all those women will talk about, that we still have to, even if you choose not to have children, that's something that you need to kind of get your mindset around it. Well, similarly, when the ability for us to have children is gone, that's an adjustment, right? And we have to, you know, accept that and own that and be able to manage that. But then there's also depression and anxiety and things that happen with menopause. And it literally is our hormone. So it's really trying to be kind to ourselves and remember, if we can, remember those angst-ridden puberty years, right? Where you had no idea whether you were coming or going, and you were happy one second and you were crying the next, and you were fighting with your friends and your best friends are happy again. That all happens again during menopause. You'll find as you Google, it's almost overwhelming. And so sometimes when we say, wow, there's nothing out there, there is, right? It's just trying to find it, trying to find a trusted source for it, you know? And that's, to me, where the nonprofit side came in. There's a lot of organizations out there, but they're kind of hybrids. It's a business. They're going to try to sell you supplements while they talk about menopause kind of stuff. I wanted there to be a true nonprofit where everything that comes through can be said, like, no one's making money off this program, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, that's what I think women needed. And so I hope that we can be that. But there's a lot of great information out there for women to find. And again, however they're comfortable with talking about it, or if they're not comfortable talking about it, then there's great things for them to read and absorb and, you know, again, determine what's right for you.
Or listen to, as if a podcast, for instance.
That's exactly it.
I think that is the undervalued aspect of most nonprofits, is the clearinghouse of resource availability. And half the battle, actually more than half the battle, is knowing where to start on any issue, whether it is something about you personally, your children, your family, home improvement, just knowing where to go. So to be able to give our community a resource, and for you to create this resource for 42 million women and growing, is such a gift. It's such a gift.
Well, we're lucky to do it, right? And then, as I always said, this is the contribution I make in my postmenopausal years, right? If I can make this something that becomes a positive experience for women, and by the time my daughter reaches menopause, again, everyone knows, we know what to do. We know how to do it. Women's healthcare has improved tremendously, you know, women's well-being in general, like I said, you know, it's not just health. The other thing I want to just mention that I think is also something that's confusing for women is, you know, menopause is not a disease. So we spend a lot of time talking about treatment and stuff, you know, and going through this, but it is not a disease. It is a stage of life. And we're not patients until we seek treatment for symptoms. Right. And so that kind of duality that comes with it. Yes, it's a health issue for women, but it's not a disease. So how you approach it, and if you think about that kind of stuff, you know, again, not being the negativity of, you know, oh, God, you know, it's menopause. But again, it's a life stage. It's menopause. And it could be super easy or it might be difficult. And we really, you know, like you said, I think having the right attitude about it is going to make a difference no matter which way that goes for you.
So what do you need as a foundation? How can people support you? What can we do to make sure that you can keep running so that we can have these valuable resources available to us?
Well, we do have a membership. If you go to our website, which is just nationalmenopausefoundation.org. I know that's really long, but I'll eventually get a shorter URL. Subscribing, right? Part of what building this foundation is kind of creating that army of women who are going to respond. That's what's going to make us powerful. Right? So we have a free newsletter. Like I said, we have an online community called the Menopause Metamorphosis. Again, it's just women talking to women about whatever topic you want and kind of getting advice. We do have moderators who have some health background who, you know, chime in and direct people to important things. But growing those things are my two biggest efforts right now. getting the word out. That's why it's so wonderful of you to take the time to talk with me about the foundation and the work we're doing, and directing women to that so that we can build up that community. And then again, we become a forceful and responsive group that will have a say and have a voice in what happens with our healthcare, what happens to us in, in the marketplace, what happens to us in, you know, in the job market, et cetera. So that's really the biggest thing. Obviously, donations are always welcome. That's wonderful. And again, women can participate in that way. But again, I really would just love people to subscribe, to come to the website, to find out more information, to share their stories, you know, to be part of the community. That's how we'll grow it.
So that is the National Menopause Foundation, and that is www.nationalmenopausefoundation.org.
Well, I'm fired up still. I feel empowered. I am ready to subscribe. I am ready to start reading some more.
And you're always ready to read.
I know. I mean, I'm, oh goodness, it's a lot. It's a lot. But, you know, I feel so lucky to be on this side where I'm just starting this journey or this phase of my life. And, you know, my mom is not alive. And I don't really remember her talking about menopause. I remember when she went through it, but I was out of the house really. So I don't really feel like I was a part of that process. And I don't have like family or aunts or, you know, anybody in my life to kind of speak to this. So I think it's important too to point out that there are a lot of women out there that don't have older women that in their family that can really speak into their lives about this. And it can be really lonely in that sense too. And so I just appreciate that I have a place to go where I can seek out older women, because I love being with older women. It's exciting and comforting.
Yes,
I feel taken
is.
Care of. I feel nurtured in some regard, in some like badass kind of empowered way. So well done.
There's nothing more important. And I think the same thing, we do a disservice to each other in so many ways in our lives because of this kind of weird competitiveness that we have amongst women. And we have to get over that. And so I don't know that we'll ever get rid of it entirely, but for those of us who are willing to talk about it and work towards it, I think it's something really important, right? And no, you always have, someone always has your back, right? There's always going to be someone. You will be able to find those people who will inspire and who will talk to you and who will mentor you in anything in life, right? I think that's really important, but particularly at this stage of life. So yeah, we welcome you into the community, and we're here to talk with you and support you as you start that journey. And like I said, it's really exciting because it's just starting the journey for you, but at least you're aware now.
Yeah.
Oh, right. This might happen. Right.
Yeah. And I don't feel dread.
Prepared, not scared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. That's great. That's absolutely true. You know, but I've told that with women, young women all the time. It's like, literally every decade of my life has been better than the decade before. So as we think about aging, it's again, we dread the 30s, but I had an older friends who told me, don't sweat it. 30s are awesome. And then when I became, you know, in my 30s and my 40s, and I remember I was, you know, again, working with a lot of younger women, obviously in public relations, and I got married and had a baby at, you know, in 40. And I said to them, like, oh my God, don't dread it. This is the best decade of my life. And so those are the kind of things that we need to hear from women, you know, that are home before us, that's it. And again, like you, I've always loved having older mentors, women who showed me the way, who kind of I could look to say, oh, that stage of life is kind of cool. Look what she's doing. And, you know, in my 50s, I have that from friends who are 60s and 70s. So I'm like, man, she's amazing. And I want to be that when I grow up. So I want to be that for younger people too. And so that's how we make this all good for everyone.
So awesome.
Well, as we continue this journey, I am midway, for transparency sakes. I am 45. So I'm a little bit farther along the process than Jess. And I have two older sisters, one of which who is fighting her aging, kicking and screaming every ounce of the way. And then another sister who embraces more of her, as she says, wise crone aspect of aging. And between the two of them, I feel supported, but I am looking forward to growing that community. And I really think that one of the things we'll have to continue to unpack is the getting okay with aging ourselves. That is step one, because we're not going to feel comfortable talking about it with other people if we aren't comfortable sitting in the space of admitting that we're aging every single day and not fighting it tooth and nail and being curious and being open, as opposed to being so, 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 so scared.
Thank you so much, Claire.
Thank you, guys. So great meeting you. Thank you for all the work you're doing, bringing these. I love the idea about, you know, these are things we should talk about, right? How do we have these uncomfortable conversations and make them not so uncomfortable?
We Should Talk About That is created and hosted by Jess Buchanan and Jessica Kidwell. Our production is done by Jarrett Nicolay at Mixtape Studios. The theme song, Be Where You Are, is courtesy of Astra Bia.
To learn more about this or any of our episodes, visit our website at www.westatpod.com and follow us on our social media accounts. We are at WeStatPod on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. This community grows by spreading the word, so follow us and invite others to listen.
And if you like an episode, consider giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening. We are so glad you are here. Be where you